Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Adams. Every week, we bring on some of the brightest leaders around the world to discuss issues facing high net worth individuals and family offices today.
Hello and welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. Today, I have with me Sid Walker. Sid formerly served as a campus minister and a foreign missionary, and now serves ultra high net worth families as an estate planning consultant. He works closely with ultra high net worth families and family businesses to create unique ways to achieve all objectives, such as estate tax reduction, preserving wealth, and asset distribution during life and beyond. Well, Sid, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I am very glad to be here.
So we actually met in Atlanta at the Southeastern Family Office Forum a couple of months ago. And this is a long time coming to get the conversation down on tape, but we were both in a next gen breakout session amongst other sessions that occurred during the conference. And it's one of those things where the definition of next gen has changed quite a bit over the last 10, 15 years. It's really evolved.
It has. And I would add that that conference has really brought a lot of good changes with the way we think about that and the way we approach that, particularly from the advisor space out there.
So say more. What do you mean in terms of why is it better now than it was before?
I feel that the Southeast Family Office Forum has done a really good job of bringing people together to not only put relevant questions in front of next gens, but also be patient with letting those constituents come together, share what's on their heart, share what's on their mind, link arms with other like-minded people that might not have had the chance to do that before. And now that that conference is in its 10th or 11th year, I think it's come into its own with that's now the expectation, that you come to that conference willing to share, wanting to share, and hear from your other fellow folks out there.
Yeah, it's a great conference. And I think, you know, sometimes in family office world, you attend events and it's so investing heavy and technically oriented. CFOF is a breath of fresh air for me because it's much more qualitative, what I would call like squishy issue oriented, which can be really powerful and helpful for a lot of people. I find it to be one of the best parts of the conference.
Oh, for sure. And even though it may seem content heavy for a lot of people, for the people that choose to engage in a purposeful way, I think they come away from that conference feeling more empowered to take what they find within themselves and with other people and go back to their respective families and practices and communities and be more real with having had the chance to go to a conference where they're able to be more authentic.
So what's your, maybe give people a sense of your background, how you got involved in the family office consulting next gen space?
Great question. Thanks for asking. I'm from the South and have had the opportunity to live in a lot of different areas in the world. And it's not surprising that I would find myself living back in the South again, because it's a little bit easier to connect with people relationally in the American South as compared to like the Midwest or California, for me anyway. And a real pivotal part in my journey is serving as a campus minister and foreign missionary into other parts of the world. And within that chapter, I learned how to serve. And it's interesting that when you put yourself in the position of a servant, that's exactly how a lot of people will treat you. But being in a place where I was able to give back and be a part of something bigger than myself brought me to the place where I was able to take some of the experiences within my own life and my own family and learn how to serve my own family first and foremost. And then through a positive experience in that, I saw a need to serve other families that were struggling with some of the same things my own family was struggling with.
And I want you to, when you put yourself in a position as a servant, many people would treat you that way. Could you expand upon that?
Sure. Whether you're living in the United States or Europe or wherever you're living, a servant can oftentimes be looked upon in a little bit different light and a little less than, whether you're serving in a restaurant or serving in a hospital or wherever it is. I think the role of a servant really teaches you a lot about yourself and other people and how to handle yourself. And what I learned when I was in that space are things I really needed to learn. And I don't know how I would have learned it any other way. And one of the most unique aspects of my time as a campus minister, I served as within a nonprofit organization that asked us to raise our own funds to financially support ourselves. My experience in that was quite extraordinary because I was able to get a glimpse into how some of the people's lives that were wealthy or in some cases were ultra wealthy. I saw some of the problems that they experienced and some of the concerns that they had, mainly in asset distribution. That's where the concerns seemed to center. And as I engaged with some of those families from a ministry perspective, I saw the need to serve them in the same way that I was serving college students, if that makes sense.
No, that does. And that's really helpful. When we talk in the family office recruiting world, we talk about the servant heart or the service leader orientation. And I think it's a big reason people like working with families is that they find it hugely rewarding and satisfying to be in service of others. Has that been your experience as well?
Sure. If you just take our relationship, Ryan, one of the things I've observed and read about your work is your focus on sharing knowledge is one of the primary components that we look for in trying to figure out which families we want to serve. Because it didn't take me very long to figure out that the need out there and the problem that my practice is attempting to solve is in some ways a lot bigger than I have the capacity to serve. So looking for and searching for and then engaging with families that are prospects, looking for the ones that are open-minded is probably maybe one of the best things I've stumbled upon in the field. Because I'm sure you would agree with serving any family that has any wealth at all, one of the things that I've noticed that's true of every single engagement is that there's no single magic bullet to solving a family of wealth. And as you engage with a family and all their different perspective generations and all the concerns that have from coming from a broken world that we live in, it's only natural to want to respect the idea that having an open-mindedness to solve some of those issues and concerns as it pertains to wealth management and wealth distribution, that sort of is the issue here.
So I know the majority of your work is on the estate planning side. If you could, I mean, estate planning is always top of mind for families and folks that own private businesses. Give us the kind of high-level state of play right now. What are your families worried about? What's front burner for them? And where are you spending a lot of time on the estate planning side these days?
Because for so many people, estate planning is personal. And they usually only like to engage on that topic with their closest of friends and the advisors that have served them at a fairly deep level over the years, one of the three things that I've come across in my space that are top of mind for most families is estate tax reduction, because that's such an issue. And within my work, estate tax reduction may very well be the aspect of their lives that they're most, that's the easiest to talk about, because nobody wants to pay any more in tax than they absolutely have to. The other is asset distribution, which we've touched on just a few minutes ago. That probably is the most problematic area. And then the third is multi-generation concerns. And the basic problem that I'm trying to solve is helping families get to the deeper heart of their story that they usually aren't interested in sharing with their advisors for a whole host of reasons. Oftentimes it's because the advisor simply doesn't ask, or maybe the family isn't comfortable sharing a deeper level concern. My practice is focused on, from the way that I'm compensated, from the way that we engage, from beginning to end, we focus as much as we can on trying to get a family to engage with us enough so that we can get the deeper part of the story. And then from that story, that eventuates into a deliverable that I call an action plan. That's nothing like I've seen out there in the marketplace. Developed that specifically because I couldn't find any advisors that helped my own family that offered anything like that. And as I looked throughout other families like mine, I saw the same problem. So we solved that problem by getting at a deeper level of the problem that families aren't comfortable sharing with their traditional set of advisors. We organized that deeper story into a list of objectives, generation by generation, individual by individual. In almost every case, we find a matriarch that's oftentimes on the path to becoming a widow with no real clear path to a competent advisor that understands what those needs really are. We zero in on those needs as well as others similar to that, such as a child that might have a special need or a divorce situation, which is part of my story. So empathizing and sympathizing with those deeper issues, and then organizing an action plan based on those objectives. Then we go to the advisor or advisors, and we craft a plan that's the best that a family could have, which gives them a much better chance to see what we call wealth success.
Yeah, I think it's that conversation that a lot of families struggle with, bridging that gap between the technical third-party vendors that come in and they say, hey, here's your trust and estate plan. This is all of the things we're going to do to minimize your tax liability and control, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's great, and it's probably papered correctly, but unless people understand the why or the motivation behind it, it can get very lost in the shuffle. And there's this just information understanding gap, especially between the generation that institutes the plan and the ones that are impacted by it down the road, right?
That is why most estate plans fail after a transition of wealth, largely from what you just said. And it's that in particular that gives me the greatest concern, because it doesn't have to be that way. I speak to financial advisors and estate planning attorneys and high-end insurance salesmen all the time. And they all tell me that they wish they had come across my practice a long time ago, because it's what you just said that really is sort of the fuse to the powder keg that allows a family to go down the path of really blowing up. And then the financial resources begin to dissipate. And then we have just a loss all the way around. But the loss isn't limited to financial. The loss also extends to lawsuits among family members and then lost relationships. And that's the loss of the worst kind.
So, you know, you referenced your own situation as a child of divorce, which I appreciate you being so open about. Are there anecdotes or case studies that you'd be able to share with us that illustrate the scope of work you do and the service you provide?
Sure. I could really talk all day about that. But the short-term answer, or the shorter version of my answer, is that when you live in the broken world that we live in, which I referenced earlier, that naturally extends to any family, whether it's divorce or a remarriage, or perhaps there's an adoption, or perhaps there's a loss of a family member. Whatever the brokenness is, there really isn't a whole lot of space to get into that with the traditional set of advisors. There are a good many that like to talk about it. But what I found is that when you have a family with any level of brokenness, in my case, it was divorce, and when you apply any type of liquidity event or success, or when wealth comes into that type of family, it just highlights the level of brokenness. And what I mean by that specifically is that one of the commonly held thoughts on why most families fail is a lack of trust. And when there's a divorce type situation, as it was in my case, that's the tendency and that's the default. My theory, of which I built my practice on, is that, and I said this before, it doesn't have to be that way. And with the right space and the right time, I think our practice can extend itself to families who need an advisor who not only cares, but is compensated and is engaging in a way that doesn't compete with other advisors and comes from a place of objectivity. So we can hear, listen, and then help a family succeed as they need to on their terms.
Exceptional family offices, family enterprises, wealth management, and financial services organizations require superior leadership to successfully thrive in today's competitive environment. This is why I'd like to introduce you to our new sponsor, Mac International. Mac International is recognized as the premier boutique firm that specializes in providing retained executive search and strategic human capital consulting solutions to single and multi-client family offices, family enterprises, and the full spectrum of wealth management advisory, investment management, and financial services firms that serve ultra-high net private investors and family offices on a national and international basis. If you're interested in learning more about Mac International, visit their website at macinternational.com.
So how does it work in practice? Maybe explain when you get involved, how you get involved. If a family is intrigued by what they're hearing right now, when do they bring you in?
The most ideal situation is today. There's no real perfect time to bring in an advisor such as me and my team. Beyond that, we most oftentimes work with families that have a family business or who own a closely held business. The other type of family that we work with most often is a family that has multi-generations. And then the third family that we work with is a one-generation family who has done really well, maybe in the tech type of industry. The first thing that we do is we come alongside a family and their advisors, and we ask a different set of questions. Several years ago, I was asked to be the keynote speaker at the Atlanta Estate Planning Council. The title of my keynote was Asking a Different Set of Questions. And the person who is president of that organization asked me to speak on that topic because this particular gentleman couldn't find an advisor who would be willing to ask those different set of questions. So I would say that not only do we ask a different set of questions, but we also listen to a different set of answers. We're listening and asking the matriarch and the patriarch and anyone else in a family, what is it that's most important to them? And then we listen carefully to the answers. That's one of the first places that we start. The second thing that we do that's different than most people is that we're able to take what answers that a family has, and then we organize that into an action plan based on their objectives. And we also have the opportunity for a family to go about the implementation of that, because our fee covers all of the chance to solve the problems and the gaps that we uncover from the assessment phase.
Now that's tremendous. And where do you, maybe rewinding a little bit, like how did you get here? How did you go from you know, you said you were a campus minister and you did work abroad, to working as an estate planning consultant advisor for ultra high net worth individuals. Can you maybe help me kind of connect those dots?
Yeah, sure. It sounds like a jump, but it's really not, particularly when I share what I'm about to share with you. Right in the middle of my campus ministry experience, my father sold a business that he built from the ground up. And that put me right in a front row seat of a G2 family member. A G2 just means second generation. And that was a role that I had no idea was going to happen in my life. And thankfully, the campus ministry chapter of my life prepared me for that. I had no idea that was happening at the time. Through that experience, I began to see a lot of the concerns and a lot of the problems that families experience firsthand in my own life. And I didn't want my family to become another statistic. I didn't want myself to become another statistic. So I saw a need within my own family. And as I began to solve that, I saw the need to build a practice around helping other families in the same way that I helped myself.
And how has it been being an entrepreneur?
It's been a wild ride.
Yeah.
There's been some serious highs and there's been some serious lows. One thing that I would say that I inherited from my father is an entrepreneurial spirit. He's more of a serial type of entrepreneur. I'm a little bit more of a not so serial, but yeah, it's been a great experience and I would certainly recommend it, because it was clear to me that after one small chapter of my life when I was in corporate America, that was not the path for me.
What's been the biggest realization for you or finding on that entrepreneurial journey working with families?
That when you're on the entrepreneurial path, you're very oftentimes creating something new, you're solving a problem, you're making someone's life better. Everyone that I talked to in my research phase told me that you need to solve a problem or make someone's life better. Well, I knew I could do that, but I knew that my idea would require a lot of education, because essentially what I do really doesn't exist in the marketplace. Most advisors that help families of wealth or help families with a family business are usually chasing the resources because that's how they get paid. And I think that's completely fine. I think the traditional advisor mindset is those folks do a great job. The problem is that oftentimes that strategy isn't enough. And I saw that in my own family. So when you solve a problem and you go down the path of an entrepreneur, be willing to accept the fact that you're going to do some educating, but particularly if you're trying to solve a problem with a solution that doesn't exist. And I had to learn how to accept the fact that in some of those education processes, I wasn't going to get paid.
So Linda Mack, who is the founder of my firm and tremendous, she's got this story that she always tells of this family brought in this new CEO, and this guy went to work, audited everything that the family was doing, and went ahead and surreptitiously renegotiated fees with all the advisors that the family worked with. Came back to the family and said, hey, I've reduced our fees this much money. I've saved us this much money for everything we do. And the family said, go back and give them back all the money. And if you don't, you're fired. And it's that great example of what you talk about, which is like balancing this financial objectives with the values of the family, because the family said, we know that we're paying full freight and maybe we could negotiate a little bit harder, but these are service providers that have been tremendously valuable to us. And we really have enjoyed this deep relationship with them and we're willing to pay for it. So how do you work with families to help kind of shoot the gap between that financial acumen while still maintaining this value system and that culture within the family itself?
The first thing I'd say is that from the experience that you just shared, or the example that you just shared, is one thing I found in the relationship business is that families will sign up for an advisor type of relationship because of a special relationship that they have, but they stay involved because of the service that they receive or the care that they receive that's either has to be or is different than anywhere else. And the other thing I'd say, that if after a period of time, if you're not bringing new ideas to the table, then a family is going to start to wonder, is this just about the fee that they're earning? And are they very transactional minded or are they relationship minded? So we try to bring a relationship approach to that mindset. And we're not in the advisor placement business. However, we oftentimes find that a family will tell us up front that all their advisors are completely fine and hunky-dory, only to find that down the road, once we get all the issues on the table, we find that a good many of their advisors aren't necessarily capable of going with the family as we continue to help them grow.
So we started this conversation off talking about the next gens and how we met at that session. It's hugely top of mind, obviously, with a lot of families these days. How do you think about engaging the next generation into these conversations when it comes to estate planning?
The first and foremost is that just like every family and family office is different, every next gen is different. And we've consistently found that if you ask their opinion and how they want to be communicated with, they'll tell you. And if you honor and respect that, that goes a long way with building the type of relationships with the younger generation, which is, I think, what you referenced there.
So I've done, I don't know, 270 some odd episodes or something. And when it comes to next gen in leadership development, it almost always comes down to communication, which you just referenced. Practically, and if you could provide examples, how do you do that the right way?
First thing out of my mouth is that every family and family office is different. At the same time, one of the biggest challenges that families face out there is when they have the traditional family office mindset. The traditional family office mindset doesn't usually encompass a family-wide communication system, whether that's email or a website, whatever the solution is. But a family's got to address that and they need to face that on their own timing and at their own pace. And we make suggestions and recommendations based on what we found through a fairly deep assessment process. And then we allow them to select which one is best for them.
So a lot of families obviously are thinking about wealth preservation and being stewards of this capital. How do you think about enabling the family to have that mindset and any insights you can provide into families that do it well? Like, where have you seen consistencies or common characteristics with families that do have that long-term wealth preservation mindset and value system without sacrificing the culture that they have?
Yeah. There's a lot I could say. The first two or three things that come to my mind that would be the most relevant and helpful is that we oftentimes get that type of question. And our standard procedure, not only in a tactical sense, but in a relationship sense, is to go back to the family's set of objectives that we've carefully asked questions about and we've listened to and we've organized and we've gone back to the family and we've asked, are these objectives correct? Do they have the right wording? Do they have the right tone? Do we have this correct? Only after a serious back and forth process, that's part of my discovery process that I referenced early. The only way I would present a final action plan to a family is having gone back and forth for a sufficient amount of time where both the family and me and my team feel comfortable that we have all of the objectives in front of us that we need to have for this particular chapter in the family's life. And we answer those types of questions based on what they've already told us and what we've already agreed upon as what's most important to them. Believe it or not, I've not found any family out there that I've worked with that's had someone that has done that. That alone makes us supremely different from any other potential person out there that might help like we do. So if you can steer a family in the right direction with the type of question that you asked, based on what they've already communicated is important, along with some of the concerns. Some of those are good. Sometimes those are more concerning than others. That's the first way we address that type of question. That's with the family's own wording and mindset and thinking to begin with. That's what I would say to begin with.
That's helpful. And then what about this kind of legacy beyond just financial assets? How do you work with families to articulate that and then execute on it?
I'd say there are two different versions of how to go through deciding what's important to a family with their legacy. The most easy way to point to explaining legacy or talking about legacy is in a governance sense. What are their core values? What's their purpose? What have they collectively decided as a family as the reason for this wealth? And how do they want to affect the world and their family with this wealth? That's what I call the governance side. The other side of that that I think gets lost in the whole idea of helping a family corral its legacy and come up with a way to bring legacy down to earth, because oftentimes the word legacy in the insurance industry has kind of absconded with that word and use that and run with that in a positive way, I think. But for most people, legacy can be very amorphous. We bring that down to earth with the next set of legacy, which I'll explain, which is one of the most practical ways that I've seen a family go through the practice of building out their legacy. Is one of the other components of my action plan is a summary version of their assets and liabilities. It's amazing to me that when we go through a family's list of assets, which oftentimes include real estate assets, the number of real estate properties that are held by a family that are very important, very special to them in some way. Perhaps it's the real estate appreciation. Maybe it's the fact that they have a zero cost basis and this piece of property is providing an income to a family member that might not have an income and need an income. Maybe it's this property is located in a specific part of the country that they want to hang on to. Would you believe the number of times we go through a family's list of assets and we ask them which one of them they might want to designate as a legacy asset? Many times they tell us that they've never been asked that question before. And then when they answer that, they tell us, wait a minute, these two or three properties right here that we own, maybe they're in Malibu, or maybe they're in Rosemary Beach, or maybe they're in the Hamptons. We want to make sure we hang on to those assets. And when we can designate that and communicate that back to the attorney and to the financial advisor, we can protect that asset from being sold if it's maybe a situation where the patriarch dies suddenly or prematurely. Oftentimes what happens is the executor comes in and without specific written information, oftentimes that property could be sold because it's the easiest property to sell, which is why it's a legacy asset. So that's a very practical way that we combine that practical aspect of helping a family with their legacy combined with the governance side of legacy. Both of those together really help a family get its arms around not only what's important to them from a core values and a purpose and vision perspective, but also from a real asset perspective.
Yeah, I think it's all about asking the right questions, right?
And then listening to the answer.
Well, yeah, that's the other half of it, which a lot of people don't do. Well, Sid, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been a great conversation. If you want them to walk away with one high-level takeaway for this whole talk or what you do, what would that be?
The tendency for wealth to dissipate is the default because of a lot of reasons. Myself and my family at one time were on that path. I decided that it doesn't have to be that way. And solving that within my own self, within my own life and my own family is what brought me to this place to say from my own personal experience that it doesn't have to be that way. We can very easily help a family craft the best plan possible to give them the best chance at seeing what we call wealth success.
That's tremendous. So thank you for coming on and thank you for the conversation. If people are interested in learning more about you and the work you do with families, what's the best way for them to find out more?
Go to my website, which is prosperouspartners.com. And I would absolutely love if anyone who's listening to this would want to contact me to ask any questions, to talk about their specific situation. We're happy to help.
Yeah, please do. I encourage you. Sid's a great guy and does tremendous work. And it's an underserved part of the community, in my opinion. For our listeners, please do leave us a review and a rating. Let us know your favorite part of this conversation. Sid, a question we ask everyone that comes on the show, do you have a daily practice that helps bring peace to your life?
I do, and it's called CrossFit. Several years ago, I decided that it was time to integrate physical fitness into my everyday life, or to my most everyday life. And it's been a game changer with sleep, with stress, reducing stress, that is, and feeling my best and looking my best.
Love it. I love working out, so I'd love to hear it. Well, Sid, I want to thank you for coming on. I look forward to staying in touch. If nothing else, I'll see you at the next edition of CFOF, and keep doing the good work out there.
Thanks so much for having me, and it was always good to talk to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.